Welcome. I'm Ann Miske, the president and CEO of Union Station Homeless Services and the host of our podcast, Changing the Narrative About Homelessness. Changing the narrative is exactly what we're trying to do. We invite you into listening to open and honest conversations about housing and homelessness. We're extremely excited today to bring you into this bonus episode highlighting some great moments from our first season. Please feel free to go back and listen to the full episodes. And of course, if you're inspired, we welcome you to get involved, become a volunteer, or even help support the work that we do to end homelessness. For new listeners, I'll start by telling you a little bit about Union Station Homeless Services. We have been in existence for 50 years in our communities, helping bring our neighbors home. We are dedicated to helping both individuals and families find housing and rebuild their lives. We believe that everyone deserves a safe home. You can check out our website to learn more about Union Station. The website is unionstationhs.org. Again, unionstationhs.org. Let's start talking about the myths around homelessness. Ann Oliva, CEO of the National Alliance to End Homelessness, outlined some of the most common misconceptions in episode 6. Is being homeless in Los Angeles really that different? Let's start with the weather.
We hear a lot about the reason we have so much homelessness here in California is because all those quote unquote homeless people move here because of the nice weather. And we know, in fact, that is not the case. People fall into homelessness when they're already living here.
I also have heard that particular story in just about every community that I go to. And the data never bears it out. The data always shows that it's people who are from the state and from the community in 80%, 90% of the time. LA is quite simply one of the toughest housing markets in the country. And you have a lot of people with very low incomes who are on the edge of having one thing happen and then losing their housing. I worked on the HUD-VASH program, and LA was the first place in the country that we started to see difficulty in finding units, even for veterans, even using a voucher. And so, like you mentioned, renters have to be earning something like 3 times the minimum wage in LA to afford a modest unit.
Yeah, and I would add another piece to that is that bureaucracy exists everywhere. But I think getting housing built or created here in Southern California has all sorts of hoops that not necessarily other states and places do. I've talked to developers and people working in the affordable housing space, and it is really difficult to jump through all those hoops. It takes a long time. And then, of course, we have what we all know exists, and that is community pushback. You know, what we all often call NIMBYism, not in my backyard. And that is something we contend with all the time.
Speaking of NIMBYism, or not in my backyardism, part of what we do at Union Station is try to address the fear and misconceptions that abound about people who experience homelessness in our communities. In our first episode, Sean Morrissey, our Vice President of Advocacy and Community Engagement, and Teresa Eilers, Vice President at Street Level Strategy, offered important strategies to connect with the community who might be opposed to supportive housing in their neighborhoods.
Let's talk a little bit about specific communication strategies that we've been using as we've learned how to do this better. And let me throw this to you, Sean. We've talked about the myths that are out there. Can you talk a little bit about how we address some of those?
Yeah, I think the first thing that we did was that we created a myths fact sheet, make that a very formal portion of our presentation, which also, you know, works to dispel a lot of the stigma. So that by the time we got around to the questions and answers, those statements or those myths, if you will, had already been refuted. So that was really helpful. The other part of the communication, I think, that is crucial is we always made sure that we had the voice of lived experience present in the room. And that serves two purposes. One, it serves to humanize the problem in a real way that people can see that this is really just a human being who is not very different from me. And the other purpose that having someone with lived expertise in the room serves is you kind of temper people's anger, negativity, some of the statements that you would normally hear people make that they don't feel as comfortable making when the people that they're talking about are also part of the panel presentation.
Absolutely. There is a lot of frustration out there about homelessness. We see the numbers growing. We've seen encampments, and people feel like, well, all of this money is going, but it doesn't feel like things are getting better. What people don't realize is we're housing record numbers of people, but the inflow is greater than the outflow. More people are falling in every day than we can manage. But what we're doing actually is working. But at the same time, there is this frustration in the community. And I think part of it is because people feel like they can't do anything. So can you talk a little bit about calling people to action, if you will, and how that changes where people may fall on an issue if they have a way to do something?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I want to start with the fact that, no, this is systematic. This is happening to folks throughout the entire state, throughout the entire country. And so we need to create systematic solutions. So that's part of mobilizing people to call them to action, is you have to acknowledge, okay, well, you can't solve homelessness unless you have a home. So one, we either keep people in their homes, or two, we create housing for people to go into, whether it be affordable housing, supportive housing, and in the interim, some type of shelter. And so that's really important for people to be on board and say, this is the solution. And then it's thinking about, well, which people do you need to get on board? And in my mind, there's three different groups. And so the first group is your base, the folks who organized that bus tour with us. And they said, okay, yes, housing and homelessness is an issue. And the solution is we need more supportive services and we need more housing, and the housing first model works. The second group is the independents or the persuadables, where we bring them into the tent with us. And then the third group that we need to target are the people in power, and we need our base and we need those persuadables to go and give public comment to city council members, to their supervisors, to commissioners. Also, in my opinion, build one-on-one relationships with them. It's really easy to be angry at people in power all the time, but I know someone who's a huge Housing First advocate, who's a staunch Democrat. And she's befriended a council member who is a staunch Republican, and they have the cutest text messages back and forth. And it's just because she prioritized building a relationship with him. And so he'll reach out to her specifically to get an opinion outside of his bubble because he views her to be a trusted source. So building relationships with people in power is extremely important, and it's not just fighting.
Let's talk now about some of the biggest challenges people experiencing homelessness face: accessing basic needs, including healthcare. We dedicated an episode, Street Medicine, Healing, and Homelessness, to discuss how we can meet and heal people where they are. We spoke to Brett Feldman from Keck USC School of Medicine about the importance of street medicine. I started by asking, what is street medicine?
Street medicine recognizes that people experiencing unsheltered homelessness can't access healthcare the way the rest of us do. And access is much more than being insured. For example, if you are living on the street and you might not be able to leave your encampment in order to go into a doctor's office because you know everything that you own will be stolen. And same thing if they're going to go to the DMV, or that maybe an encampment suite might come by and throw all your stuff out if you're not there to say, yes, this is what I want or this is what I don't want. There's an understandable preoccupation with basic survival needs. As I mentioned before, a lot of the people we serve are getting 2 to 3 meals a week. Maybe the most common way they get those meals are they buy them, which means they have to do something to earn money. And in order to go to an appointment, now they're not eating today because they're at the doctor's appointment, and also not eating tomorrow because they didn't save money for the next day. So these are impossible choices that we can't expect people to make. Do I eat or do I go to a doctor's appointment? It's not a fair decision. And so we go to the people in recognition of their sacred humanity and these challenges that they face, with the goal of providing the same quality of care on the street that you'd expect in a brick and mortar clinic. We dispense medications, draw labs, do ultrasound on the street, the whole idea being that if we can't provide it on site, then they're probably not going to get it.
We believe in housing first, the idea that everyone deserves a home in order to move towards health, stability, and the ability to thrive in community. But getting housing can be difficult. And we know that something like a housing voucher is a win-win for both tenants and landlords. During our episode, Landlords and Vouchers, New Lease on Life. We spoke to Juliana Lomaglio, Union Station Homeless Services Associate Director, Housing Location, and asked her to share what she would like people to know about the importance of landlords and how we work together with them to end homelessness.
Well, I would just say, you know, as somebody who experienced homelessness, it was the worst time in my life. And the minute I got an apartment, my life changed completely. I can't even imagine having to go back to what I had experienced. I'm so house proud. I'm so, you know, grateful every single day. Even to this day, it's been 25 years that I've experienced homelessness. And every day that I wake up, I'm grateful.
Thank you for joining us and for listening to this bonus episode. Be sure and check out all of season one. And thank you to all of our guests and staff for their incredible work and insights. Be sure to like and subscribe so we can all change the narrative about homelessness. If you want to learn more about our programs, check out unionstationhs.org. This podcast is produced by Brenda Lynch and Katie Cookerley-Dietrich, edited by Jesse Lumen, with production assistance and music by Colin Feldman. Special thanks to our Union Station Homeless Services Lived Expertise Advisory Panel, or LEAP, for their insights.